Hey everyone, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Biz Chat, the Do the Woo podcast show. Woo! Woo! Woo Biz Chat is sponsored by OmniSend. OmniSend is a solution for email and SMS marketing with their CRM solution for WooCommerce shops or your own website while saving time with pre-built automation that drives sales. And Airwallex, the online payment plugin, allows you or your clients to localize your WooCommerce store checkout experience by enabling customers to pay with preferred currencies and payment methods.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to another Woo Biz Chat here on Do the Woo. My name is Marcus Burnett, and I'm a community marketer with GoDaddy. I'm here today with my wonderful co-host from Barn 2 Plugins, Katie Keith. How are you today, Katie?
Hey, great, thanks. What about you, Marcus?
Yeah, not doing too bad. We're spanning all parts of the globe today, so it's morning for me, afternoon for you, and evening for our guests. But doing pretty good. As usual, we have an excellent guest, and like I said, today we're spanning all different parts of the globe. Joining us today from the e-commerce marketing suite of tools, Meterik, is founder Bryce Adams. Welcome to the show, Bryce.
Thanks, Marcus. Thanks, Katie. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's really cool to be back on a Do the Woo show. I think the last time I did was maybe half a decade ago. I don't know. I love being able to say like half a decade, whenever I can. Time.
Absolutely.
But yeah, no, it's cool to be here.
Yeah. Happy to have you here. Bryce is here to talk about a report he recently published on the state of WooCommerce at scale. But first, would you please share with folks a little bit about yourself and your company, Meterik?
Sure, yeah. So my name, Bryce Adams. My background in Woo, I guess, started at WooCommerce itself back in 2014. I was there initially in a support role and eventually in a development role. And then Automatic acquired Woo 2015, so joined that. And that happened pretty quickly. And then left in 2016 to do Meterik. So that's like 8 years ago now, I guess, majority of mine. Career has been spent on it now. And Meterik is basically an analytics and email automation tool for WooCommerce and for Shopify and maybe more platforms in the future. But primarily, we started with WooCommerce back in 2015 and only really added Shopify a few years ago. And majority of the customers we serve around the world are WooCommerce stores. So
let's move on to the report then. So you've recently published an insights report. I think that's based on the sites which are using Meterik that use WooCommerce. And so can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. So, it was something firstly that we wanted to do for a really long time. I think even a few years in, I was like, as we were starting to just approach several thousand stores, I was starting to see trends and starting to see patterns there. And people were contacting, like one of the most common feature requests we got was benchmarking and trying to understand how a store compared to other stores. Especially in Woo, where it can feel sometimes like we're all kind of isolated on our own servers and our own websites, not necessarily all on one platform. There was a lot of demand, I guess, for a clarity into what was going on. So people were asking for it a while ago. But a project like this is challenging, I think, to do well and to do it at the quality level that I wanted. And I just knew I couldn't do it. And with the few of us that were working together, we couldn't do it, but the team's growing recently and we've got more resources. So this kind of came up. Then Luke, someone who just joined to primarily do like marketing and design related stuff. It's like, oh, I reckon I could throw something together if you can get the data. And then, it started with just like sitting around the couch here because the three of us particularly are in Melbourne. We're just talking about it. And when I started brainstorming ideas, it'd be cool to see that stat. And then kind of over Twitter, like I think Katie, we talked about some stats even a couple months ago to do with like bundles, and was talking with Vova from Freemius about different subscription stats, and started to kind of create this foundation to do this at scale. But thinking about privacy at the forefront of that, so like anonymized samples of all that data and just using averages to try paint a picture of what was going on. And I think once we had that list to work from, it started to be pretty fun because we're just like going through the list like, okay, let's try to figure out that metric and that one. And then you've then got to actually dig through it a lot more to find like the interesting parts. But it was a big project.
I think it's really useful for companies like yourself that have access to data of multiple sites to publish that, because as you said a minute ago, WooCommerce sites are all installed on people's own servers unless you're using WooExpress or something, and people just don't have those benchmarks. I've seen a bit of that going on in the industry. For example, WP Fusion's year in review reports are really useful from a WordPress perspective, because again, they publish data about the different sites running WP Fusion, like which LMS plugins are the most popular and page builders and so on. So it was really nice to see a WooCommerce version of that.
Yeah, and I think the fun thing for me with this was like, I mean, I love Woo. Like, it's where I literally start working, like my first job really was at Woo, and then just it's all I've really ever known. And I love it as a platform. I love what it enables, the fact that people can run their own site, control everything, customize everything, but also own everything. Like, that idea of data ownership is so important to me. So I kind of love that Woo enables that. And I think part of doing the report was wanting to validate, well, even though all these Woo sites are like these little, they're little islands out there on the internet, together, like, the scale that Woo is operating at is massive. And I don't think people realize it. Like, we hear numbers be thrown around, like several million Woo stores and things like that. But, you know, they all don't really mean anything until you actually see the data behind it and the scale that, and like that validation, like the brands that are using Woo. And also, I don't think people know like how many Woo stores out there are doing like millions of dollars a year in revenue. Like, there's tens of thousands, but they're, I'm not sure the exact number of that size, but there are like so many numbers of stores out there that are really pushing the limits of Woo, and people don't know about it. So it's cool to share that.
Yeah, you said that Luke came in and kind of threw something together, but this is actually really polished and really nice.
Luke is so talented, yeah.
Before we get into some of the different pieces of it, I do want to let people know that they can also follow along with us at metric.com/WooCommerce-insights. So we'll leave that link in the show notes, but if people want to look at it while we're having a discussion here, that's metoric.com/WooCommerce-insights. I ended up writing just a ton of questions basically on every slide, so I don't know if we'll get to all of them.
Awesome. But no, that's whatever's interesting.
I kind of want to jump in, maybe start from the top and work our way down. One of the first things that you shared in here is that the average age of WooCommerce stores is 4 years. That kind of lines up with the start of COVID in my head. How do you think COVID changed the landscape of e-commerce, or specifically Woo?
Well, what we saw when COVID happened, yeah, like it's an interesting perspective when you're like coming out as a SaaS, because maybe as a plugin authenticator, you would have seen at the time like an increase in sales as more people were setting up Woo stores. But for us, it wasn't. Yeah, like there was, of course, this influx of more stores, but what was really interesting was just what every store was doing across the line, like the scale of the growth during that time. Because, you know, we have some reports we were looking at back then, just in terms of being able to run the app and just see the scale of order volume and AOV and things like that across everyone. And it's like a spike around COVID, and just consistently through that whole period, we just found that on average, every store was doing better. Not necessarily, there were definitely a lot of new stores starting, but I found it more interesting just to see the existing stores all grow as a result of it. And of course, that all dropped off. And you can actually, it's pretty interesting when you look at the data scale over like a 5 year period, you see that growth and that decline happen through like the actual order volume that's happening. But I think, you know, in terms of the age, a lot of it comes down to the fact that Woo itself is not that old. The oldest Woo store could possibly, like a store could possibly be, is probably 10 years. I'm not sure the exact age. And then, I mean, over time, it's very few stores are going to go from 11 years and still be running after all that time, or necessarily be on the same platform. So I think 4 years is actually probably bigger than what I'd expect, just because Woo is such a young platform.
Yeah, that makes sense. A slightly more kind of practical question. I was interested to see that you've said 32% of stores are tracking their costs and profits as well as their sales. And I was interested in that because I didn't know it was possible to do via a website analytics tool. Everybody knows about you use it to get sales data and things like that, which is a lot better than the sales data you get from WooCommerce reports in core, which is very basic, obviously. But how does that work, tracking costs and profit? Because that data isn't entered into the WooCommerce admin.
Yeah, well, I think that's actually something that I'd love to see WooCommerce core improve, is like having the ability to set a product cost. It should just be built into Woo by default. Shopify has it by default. Almost Square does. Almost every other e-commerce or commerce platform does. Because it is something that, if you look at like 80-20, 80% plus of stores probably do have a cost that they want to set on a product. So I think it should be core. It's not, but we decided to offer that as a feature. Actually, before that, though, we just integrated directly with the WooCommerce cost of goods plugin, which itself is really good. I think that was Skyverse, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's, you know, probably explains why it was so good. And it worked really well because for us, we were able to then basically build this whole profit reporting feature and have all historical costs come in and profit reports come in without stores having to do anything. And it was really cool because they'd never even had that. They'd set up a product cost inside of WooCommerce cost of goods. And there were some basic reports, but all of a sudden we were able just to bring that data in and calculate it. But it got to a point where, you know, we were just telling everyone, go and buy the cost of goods plugin. A lot of people are like, well, I don't want to install a new plugin just to have a field on my product page to set the cost. And that's very fair, especially when they don't need the reports and the other functionality from it. So we decided to build it into the app. And then, of course, it morphed into something much bigger. We've got like shipping, transaction, extra cost you can set. A lot of people want us to do like their monthly like salary costs and office expenses because they really want to have a bigger picture of things. And I'm just like, well, we're not really meant to be like an accounting or profit tool in that way. But over time, it's kind of becoming that as people want more and more from there. And I think one of the other cool things you can do as a SaaS when it comes to this kind of thing is we integrate with Google Ads, TikTok Ads, Facebook Ads, all these different providers to let people bring in their like live advertising costs from those platforms. So it starts to be like a really cool like experience as a user because you're getting all this data from different places in one location and getting to actually report on it, aggregate it.
What's keeping the other 70-odd% or so from doing the same? Is it a knowledge thing about, you know, whether they don't know that that exists, or is it an industry thing where it doesn't make sense for some folks?
I think industry plays a big part. I think privacy, like we don't have it in a way because it was just kind of bolted onto the app. It wasn't what we initially set out to do. So we don't have a way for you to just say this user can see all the reports, but they can't see the cost and profit. And that's like a common thing that a store owner might want to hide from their team. They want them in there doing using metrics for the reports. And so a lot of users have asked us to do that, and we'll probably do that soon. I mean, I think that would increase adoption a little bit. But also, it's like, at the end of the day, we're not trying to be like an app for them to figure out their profit and pay taxes on. So we don't encourage it in that way. And I think people, when it comes to proper reporting, they're probably looking for that kind of level of detail. So they need to incorporate all their costs across the whole thing, like salaries, everything. But yeah, at the same time, I think the interesting part on our end starts to be trying to figure out reports based on that. So we added like these reports to the app a few months ago for like doing cohorts, customer cohorts based on like when they joined, by the month they joined, week they joined, maybe the first product or first coupon they use. But it's really cool to split your customers up into those cohorts automatically and then see the lifetime profit and profit margin over time, how that changes. Because then you start to understand not just at what point is a customer, has they spent enough that they've reached like a target, you know, revenue per customer, but they've actually become profitable. And you can measure that and be like, by month 14, we know on average, that's where we've got enough profit from each customer. So yeah, I love that kind of part of it more than being an accounting app.
So it's really helping WooCommerce store owners to run their company as a proper business, which a lot are more hobbyist sites, and it helps to bring them to the next level. Some of them will already be doing that, of course, but a lot of WooCommerce store owners, I think, don't do that kind of thing. And so this is really making it much more accessible. In fact, I'm kind of one wishing I use WooCommerce on my own website because I use Easy Digital Downloads and I can't access any of this.
Oh, okay.
Because quite sensibly, you've built this for WooCommerce and Shopify, the two biggest players. I get that.
I have had so many requests for EDD over the year, but every single request has come from like people I knew in the community who would want it. And then I start to think about how many stores that is. And It's like maybe a couple hundred, like that I know would pay for it as well. And it starts to be a little hard.
Yeah, totally agree.
But I've always wanted to, because all my friends and all like my colleagues and stuff are using EDT rather than Woo. So at the start, it wasn't like I could really contact too many of my friends running WordPress businesses and say, please use my product, because they were using EDD.
So you mentioned about maybe that they should put something in core earlier relating to the cost of goods. I was thinking that when I saw your stat about subscriptions, that 28% of all the WooCommerce stores that you track use subscriptions. The vast majority of them will be WooCommerce subscriptions, one specific plugin, of course. So I know they will never put that in core because they must make so much money from that premium only add-on. But
I don't think they make enough from it, to be honest. And like I think I always say it,
because it's so valuable in recurring revenue.
Yeah, exactly. It's one thing that we'd probably do like next year, and like we want to improve in the report based on the feedback, but also just based on what I think would be interesting is like actually saying, well, you know, while maybe it's 27% of stores that have subscriptions on, does that actually account for more like 40, 50% of the revenue? Or are those stores, like by default, like by average, you know, double or triple stores that don't have subscriptions? Like we didn't go into that, and I think we'd like to expand on that. But I think that would actually show that while maybe 27, 30% are using subscriptions, I think those stores tend to be much more successful because it's such a great business model if you can make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to shift gears a tiny little bit and talk about, you have a couple of slides in here about the top themes and plugins in WooCommerce stores. Looking at the top themes and plugins, I see Elementor ranking pretty high in both, and Classic Editor at number 5 in the top plugins.
Not too surprised to see that.
Yeah, native WordPress right now with full site editing isn't quite ready to handle the majority of WooCommerce stores.
Well, I think that indicates that there's still a heavy dependence on the Classic Editor for sure, right? And a lot of that might come through other builders that are being used, but also maybe, you know, other WooCommerce plugins and stuff that aren't quite there yet. And, you know, I know even for us, we've been integrating with WooCommerce blocks and stuff for the checkout recently for an update we've been working on. And I think a lot of the filters that we needed to use were only added in the WooCommerce version that just came out or it's about to come out. So I mean, that's certainly fine if things take time, and it's good to take time to get it right. But if we're, you know, we're an app that's trying to really stay ahead and move with Woo, but we were really only able to integrate with some of those features in a version that's just coming out now on June 24. So it's going to take time for that shift to happen, maybe longer than anyone's expecting. It's just, and actually, Mark, as well, while you mentioned that, it makes me think about one other stat in the report that I found a little surprising and actually came out of a discussion I was having with Max and Becker recently about PHP versions. And yeah, I noticed that 7.4 is still at 45% of WooCommerce stores that we're tracking. And I think that's actually higher than the average across all of WordPress or generally, because I think there is that kind of fear where it comes to an e-commerce store. Upgrades do come at a very big cost if it messes up. Like if something, your site goes down or if something's incompatible and you have downtime, it's not just downtime, it's like losing money time. And that's a very valid concern for an e-commerce store.
Yeah, one of the other stats that just screamed off the page at me was that the active number, the number, average number of active plugins is 58 on a WooCommerce store. So compatibility wise, you have to make sure that all 58 of those are ready to move beyond PHP 7.4 before you upgrade. But also, why so many? And what do the annual costs look like? Because not all of those plugins are going to be free. I know a lot of WooCommerce plugins, you know, cost an annual fee.
Yeah, well, I think, again, like we are always, and I think that kind of comes with a caveat with this report, like we're looking at stores that are willing to pay us, Metric as an app, at least $20 a month, and in most cases, $100 plus a month for an app for their WooCommerce store. So they are like reflective of a, I'd say, successful WooCommerce store, but not every WooCommerce store. And I think with that means like they're willing to spend, for sure, at least $2,000-$3,000 a year on their website if they're willing to pay that much to us as just an app for their website. So I think it's reasonable to think that, yeah, most of them would have 10, 20 plus active subscriptions. But with that cost, you know, comes I think, so much value, because a lot of these stores are doing significant numbers and significant volume. And if they wanted to have a similar setup, an equivalent setup on another platform like Shopify, they would be looking at a larger annual cost for sure.
I enjoyed the section about order milestones. I spent quite a while looking at that and trying to visualize like the typical store and how long it takes them to get any significant momentum and so on. So it's interesting to see that the majority, 76%, get to 1,000 orders and it takes them just over a year. Whereas it's a pretty small number that make like 100,000 orders ever, which is 7.9%, and that takes multiple years. And then 1 million orders, which kind of makes sense, is only 1%. So it's interesting to see the drop-off. It made me wonder how WooCommerce compared with that regard to other platforms that might be more kind of enterprise-tailored or something, whereas a lot of WooCommerce stores are more small.
Yeah, that's a good one, Katie. I think, look, Shopify, for sure, I think the numbers would be a bit quicker. But I don't know necessarily how many are getting to that scale as well. I think it would be similar, but again, I do think it always comes back to, like, if the store is investing a lot more in their like online presence, you know, through paying for more for the e-commerce platform, through spending more on hosting or developers or marketing costs, any of those things, they're typically going to be a bigger store. And I think WooCommerce by default is a cheaper option, so you do tend to get stores that are going to invest less in marketing at the start. But then, you know, that's kind of what we saw that I found really interesting with this report. As you kind of get to that 100K, and we didn't have enough time to really show a good picture between that 100 and 1 million, but you scale so much faster at that point because you've already got the momentum, you've already got the infrastructure set up. And probably more than anything, you're at a point in the business where you want to invest in marketing and other ways to improve your store.
You know, it kind of fits with a theory I've been developing about the way that WordPress and WooCommerce are growing more widely. If you look at data on BuiltWith, which I was looking at yesterday, I think I tweeted about it actually. If you look at WordPress and WooCommerce's growth for like the top 100,000 sites, the top 1 million sites, they're actually going down a bit. They're declining. But then if you tick the whole internet box on BuiltWith, they're going up quite rapidly. So that says to me that smaller web, the growth is in the smaller websites. And I thought that might fit with your data that the majority have a smaller number of orders as well.
Yeah, well, I think also, yeah, I think the tricky thing with all of those numbers that are out there with BuiltWith and different companies that try to track the state of e-commerce across the whole internet, right, is that we just don't know how many of those sites are actually operating and have at least 20 sales a year. You had to learn 100. And I think really the number of stores that is like sub 100 orders a year, of those numbers, it's like the majority probably. And that's okay. There's still so many stores out there that are doing larger numbers. But especially with like sites that have just, you know, been set up and not running, like you can do that basically for free on WooCommerce. So yeah, I think we have to always take those numbers with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I was looking at that chart as well, and less than 10% of stores make it to that 100,000 plus orders mark with an average time of 4 years or so to make it to this milestone. Why do you think stores don't stick it out? Like the average time to 1 million plus is like 6 years. Is it just a patience issue? Do people just need to be in it for the long run? Do people give up too early?
Maybe. I mean, maybe they've switched platforms as well. You know, that's like, it's hard to really paint that picture in a report like this. But, you know, it's something that we see tends to happen is that like stores get to a certain size and they end up then wanting to try a different platform, BigCommerce, Shopify, something custom. I've seen stores go to Magento. And so I think that sometimes can be a reason. But also it's just really hard to kind of get to that scale. Like you see, you know, people on Shopify, like especially because they send out these like trophies and things like that to commemorate when you get to certain milestones. They send like a physical item, I think you order through them to merchants. And you see people posting on Twitter, but the reality is there aren't that many stores that are getting like 1 million plus orders. That's a big volume. If you're doing 100 plus average AOV, that's like 100 million. So I think, yeah, a more realistic like average WooCommerce store, I think I don't think we published it in it. And I think the number that I was seeing was something like, off the top of my head, 30, 40,000 orders, something around that bracket. But that's still massive, especially if an average order is $100. Like,
whether you're a product or a site builder, OmniSend can help you with your customer or client's email and SMS through their CRM solution for WooCommerce. Product builders can bring their plugins and SaaS to a new level for their customers by integrating with OmniSend. And for you developers and agencies, recommending them to your clients for managing their customer relationships is spot on, because it gives them the right tool to build their email and SMS lists, send targeted campaigns, create automation workflows, and track their results, all from within their WordPress dashboard. With over 100,000 e-commerce stores already on board, have your clients and your customers get started for free by simply having them search for the OmniSend plugin on WordPress.org. The AirWallets online payments plugin allows you to localize you or your client's WooCommerce store checkout experience, so any size business is able to grow without borders. Setup takes minutes, and you'll find improved checkout conversion rates by offering Apple Pay, Google Pay, and 60-plus local payment methods. And since customers are not redirected to a different checkout page, that info is saved, and you can offer recurring payments with WooCommerce subscriptions. What really stands out with AirWallets is merchants are not forced to convert foreign incoming payments to their home market currencies, and those funds can be used to pay suppliers internationally. So, literally, you save money all around. It's all there at airwallets.com.
So the ones that are switching platforms, what is making them want to do that? What is WooCommerce not doing well at 100,000 or a million orders?
Yeah, I mean that's probably an episode in itself. Just because it's such a big thing to unpack, right? Like, it stores at that scale. What are they thinking about? What matters to them? What I found, it's like not even about reliability, but having someone to depend on. And I think Shopify does that well. It's like a safety net, a merchant running on that. Even if their site does go down, it's like it's going down with every other Shopify site, and that maybe gives them some comfort. But I have to say Shopify's reliability recently has been really good. So I think a lot of it is peace of mind. And the other thing is that I think merchants don't want to be technical. They don't want to get in the weeds that much. Like, they really just want to run their shop and not think about plugin updates or anything. So I think when I see a lot of WooCommerce agencies now pop up that are focusing on like maintenance plans and things like that, that's really good. And that's a step in the right direction. But it needs to come as well with like the reliability or the scale, like the reassurance that someone's got your back if the site goes down, and if you're not going to lose your order data and things like that. Because the cost to a store, like if their site goes down and they have to restore to a backup and it's 8 hours away before, and in that time they had orders, like it's such a big cost that it would almost pay for like a subscription for Shopify or something else in a year. So if it's going to solve it by going to one of those platforms, they're going to do it. There needs to be enough upside for them to stay with Woo. And I think there is for a lot of stores. Like, WooCommerce subscriptions is amazing and above and beyond like what most subscription platforms like that exist for Shopify are like. The cost of running on Woo is lower, and if you can do that at scale and you can really kind of optimize your site and handle how you tackle downtime, but also like have a good backup plan, have a good recovery plan, then you start to save like $700,000 a year with Woo if you're a big store. And maybe even a million plus if you're doing tens of millions a year in revenue. So Woo has a lot of advantages. It's just about kind of finding the disadvantages and trying to solve them, I think.
So Marcus, did you have any questions about the average order stuff or the refunds? Because I didn't.
I had one. So you have a note on the refund section that physical goods are refunded at lower amounts than software because of the low overhead for software. in general. The outlier here seems to be clothing and footwear. What makes, I think I have an idea, but what makes that industry have the highest refund rate?
It's like probably one of the most compelling things you can offer as a business in that industry is free returns. And really, in to almost encourage them and say, order from us as much as you want. And then the few things you don't want, send it back. We'll include a free return bag, because that's really how those stores start to get higher AOV. So I think it's a symptom of that, but it's probably by design. And it probably does actually increase the AOV for that industry quite a lot more than what it would be without it.
I see that online learning has 85% refund rate, which is kind of scary because it makes me think that people are abusing it potentially.
Oh, no. That's only 85% the refund amount, not refund rate.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, yeah. No, I'd be surprised if they were doing well enough to keep running their shop at that much of a refund rate.
Oh, the amount 1.5%. Yeah, that's better. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The one that we want to highlight that, one, a refund amount was kind of just to show, okay, well, when a refund does happen, is it a full refund? Is it a partial one? And I found that interesting with some, consumable ones like food and beverage. The refund amount on average is 56%. So that would indicate that a lot of stores are doing partial refunds. Maybe one of the items they're not happy with, it's not worth the cost of returning it. While software or online learning, it's 80-85% because it's a digital item. You can effectively refund the whole thing without incurring a major cost as a store.
Yeah, those are a little harder to partially refund too. I mean, refund, a handful of lessons from a course, you're either refunding the course or you're not refunding the course.
Exactly. And you might as well. Like, I think at that point, if you haven't incurred a cost as a software business, it's good just to find a solution like that. And I'm sure, you've experienced the same thing, both of you over the years with like WooCommerce and WordPress support. Sometimes it's easier just to solve it, let them move on, give them a refund, rather than try to hold on to 70 or 80% of the money, or 20, even 20, 30% of the money, but risk having someone who really has it out for you after that and won't speak favorably about you.
Yeah, I thought the devices section was interesting. We'll all have heard many stats way before this report that the majority of online shoppers are using mobile devices. I've always kind of ignored that because on my own website, because we sell WordPress plugins, the vast, vast majority are sitting at their desks on their desktops. So,
what percent is in your case?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's like, I don't know, 70 or 80% or something on desktop, which makes sense. You don't buy a plugin on your phone, do you? You're at work.
No, I mean, I hadn't realized that we had this in the report. I forgot, but it says it there. Yeah, software stores have the most desktop-driven customers with 79% of orders being placed on a desktop device. So
yeah, which makes sense.
That checks out.
So, but I know that for the other industry, obviously mobile is important for my business as well, but it's more so for things like clothes where people are buying from their sofas and so on. But it was interesting seeing that the average order value placed on desktop is significantly higher than people ordering on their mobiles. So even if you are in a mobile-first industry, you do really need to think about those desktop users, because even if they're buying clothes or something, that suggests to me that they're having a serious session of buying clothes. They're sitting at their computer, got multiple tabs open. It's a very different experience, and they spend more.
And that's a good point. I think another common one is like if you're buying like an appliance or an electronic product, a lot of those decisions are made at the computer where you can really take the time to research, look at five different tabs and then check out. I think, and that's a kind of trend with a lot of these numbers is that a lot of them aren't a surprise, but the actual level that the number ended up at, in this case, 38 to 62, I didn't know that until we pulled that. So, and actually, to be fair, I didn't realize that the desktop AOV would be that much higher. If you just asked me off the top of my head, I would have guessed anecdotally 30-40%, not like almost double. But yeah, I think it just comes down to when you're doing a high value order, like when you are spending several hundred dollars in a shop, you're going to probably do it on a computer. So typically, they're going to move to a desktop for those transactions.
Yeah, I also was interested for the same reason in that section. Kind of made me think about my purchasing habits and maybe how important it is for stores to have carts that you can move between mobile and desktop via login or something. Because I spend a lot of time browsing on my mobile device, and I'll toss things in the cart. But then by the time I'm ready to make a purchase, I might hop over to the computer. I've got desktop extensions that help with coupon codes and all of that kind of thing that I can take advantage of that I don't have on my mobile device. So really a lot of the purchasing, I would guess that I'm not in the minority, that there's a lot of folks that are browsing on their mobile and then making an actual final purchase on their desktop, especially like you said, with high order value
definitely
items and orders and stuff. So, you know, just being able to, like Amazon, obviously, right? I'll toss a bunch of things in an Amazon cart, and then I'll, because I'm logged in, I can log back in on the computer and finish that order. You know, the importance of having a system like that, maybe for even smaller stores to be able to jump between devices and keep your cart.
It's an interesting product idea, really. Like, I think, you know, we kind of do that, and a lot of plugins do that in a small way through abandoned cart tracking and like being able to send a link that just restores it in one click, which is close. But I think, you know, I'm just thinking about, it'd be quite cool, like even just a simple plugin that was just like, send me a link like right now just to access this card on a computer. That would probably have some value rather than being this whole thing to track cards. It can tie into that, but I think just as a core feature, it's like, I want to move this card to a desktop.
Yeah. Speaking of recovered carts, I also saw in the report that recovered carts are, the average order value of recovered carts is about 30% higher than even regular placed orders.
Yeah.
You know, the report states is because customers tend to add multiple items into their cart before making a decision, right? Then they get that abandoned cart link and they come back and place the order. What are some good abandoned cart strategies to recover these carts?
Offer an incentive. And I think the incentive should be specific to your store and the situation you're in. So there's no like one size fits all. But I think we kind of lead into this in one of the other pages where we talk about later in the report to do with the AOV of free shipping versus paid shipping orders. And I think something interesting with that is like figure out where your AOV is. And in that case, right, if we're looking at the cart report, it's around 120 is where like the average cart value was when they got placed. So then maybe you'd be wanting to incentivize people to spend over 150 and get free shipping, or over 150 and get 10% off, because at least then you're increasing your AOV by like 40-50% at the cost of 10-15% discount. So I think that's one way. But otherwise, I think it's just about also using the moment when you try to recover a cart as a marketing opportunity. So it's like not just saying recover your cart, but maybe you should also add this item based on what you already have in your cart. And then it ends up being an actual like win for the customer, because they might discover something that they didn't know about, and then they're getting a better deal because maybe they're getting free shipping as well.
I didn't see in the report numbers on percentage of stores using abandoned cart recovery versus not using abandoned cart recovery practices. Do you have maybe anecdotal numbers on how many people are actually taking advantage of that?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, again, in our case, it's all kind of limited to the scope of metric, because someone would have to, first for using metric, turn on the cart tracking feature we have, then opt to pay extra for our email feature to send an abandoned cart email, which is why we didn't go too deep into that, because it's just not big enough scale, I think, to be too insightful. But yeah, of the stores I see, I think anecdotally, it's like 20-30% of our stores are probably at least that number trying to recover cards. Not enough. And it's very common that I'll meet really successful stores that are doing significant numbers but aren't really focusing on abandoned cart recovery, but also failed order recovery and really simple actions like that that alone will pay for the cost of metric or any other plugin or app to do it. You just need to recover like several carts and you can recover the cost of the software to do it. So I think it's worth investing in for almost any business. But again, it depends on the industry and the business and the brand and all those factors. So it's never one size fits all.
Katie, is that something that you guys think about for the plugins? And I don't know how that works with EDD or any of the setup that you guys have. I know that you have demos with InstaWP and you're tracking all that stuff too. Is abandoned cart recovery something that you guys talk about, do?
Yeah, I miss Jilt. I know you used to work for that company. That was the best.
Jilt was such a great product.
Yeah, such a shame. Anyway, we now use Recapture, which is nowhere near as good as Jilt was, but it kind of does the job. The data isn't brilliant about the, it's pretty basic, but we do recover a lot of cars that way, which, as Bryce said, more than pays for Recapture. And we also use it for post-purchase emails, like sending a discount code to people a few days after they make a purchase and stuff like that. So we do kind of get our money's worth out of Recapture. It's just there isn't, for easy digital downloads, there isn't a particularly professional abandoned cart solution. I think a lot of mailing list providers like MailChimp and so on integrate with WooCommerce, as well as you having your own paid feature, Bryce, as well. So hopefully it's better for WooCommerce than EDD.
There's definitely more options for Woo. I don't think, again, like Woo is typically a second class citizen in a way there. Like on every platform, they'll tend to just do it as an afterthought. So you don't get, you know, maybe enough like tracked or like accuracy when it comes to carts. A lot of our cart tracking was actually based on and inspired by like Jilt. So I think Massive Vector got it. They did, like, you know, the whole team did such a good job on that product. So we took a lot of inspiration from that. But besides from that, I don't really see too many, like Klaviyo and all those apps that do integrate with Woo MailChimp. They're going to be like thinking about Woo once every few months. It's not like an active daily thought in how they develop and improve the product. So it's really fun for me to kind of try to prioritize Woo and think like, how can I make the best possible product for these merchants that typically aren't getting anything made for them?
So on the country and currency section, I thought it was strange that there's significantly higher average order value for when the customer is not in the store's default currency. So if it's a store in the US and they offer in British pounds, say, then there'd be a higher average order value on average than the US dollars. Can you? I can't think of any reason why. Can you?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it actually leads into two pages forward where we talk about, several pages forward where we talk about delivery distances and how people typically spend more when they're ordering from further away.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it comes down to like when you're ordering from a store, you know, in a remote like area, you're typically, it's a bigger deal. Like you might have to pay more for shipping. It might be something you can do less frequently because of the cost. So I think the average order tends to be higher because of that reason, where they're trying to like kind of maximize that moment where they are making a sale, a purchase. But also it does lead into that idea where like stores that offer free shipping end up having a higher AOV, and that can encourage higher spending. And then if you're in an international country, like paying in a different currency, that free shipping could make a difference and make you spend a lot more. And I know personally, I do that all the time. Being in Australia, most of the things I'm buying online are from overseas, and I will always spend even double or triple to get free shipping, which isn't logical in that way, but no one likes paying for shipping. Like, I don't want to pay £20 to ship something from the UK. I would much rather just pay £300 and get free shipping, but I get £300 worth of items. Not, yeah. It's a weird thing, but I think, you know, a lot of people I spoke to about this report, especially the Australian people, but really anyone, you know, American ordering from Europe or Europe ordering from America or Asia from anywhere in the world, like, you want to maximize those purchases to get free shipping. But also, it might just not be something you do frequently because you have to wait several weeks for the delivery to come. So you want to spend a bit more instead of, you know, something local where you can order several times in a week and it's not going to be that much of a delay.
Yeah, I'm Amazon Prime member, like many folks, at least in the US, probably all over the world. So I'm used to the free shipping. I was going to say, it's no surprise that free shipping increases the average order value. But also, I'm wondering if we've all been kind of conditioned to expect free shipping as an option. And it shows in the report that about 2/3 of stores are offering it. What advice would you have for the third of stores that are not yet offering free shipping? Is it just a barrier for them, or?
Well, I think, I don't remember if we actually had the number of stores that offer free shipping, but I know that like 66% of orders did have free shipping, which just as a sheer number of orders is.
No, I read the stat wrong a little bit, but I'm curious for stores that don't offer free shipping. Is that just like a no-brainer that you should offer free shipping that'll basically guarantee higher average order value?
Yeah, but not necessarily on every order, especially if your shipping costs are high. Like it's not feasible. Then I think you need to really figure out, well, what is your shipping cost? Not just what you're charging customers. A lot of stores tend to try to charge a bit more. What's your actual cost? Also, what would your cost be if you were able to have double the number of orders because you're offering free shipping? The cost might come down with that volume, which is a factor. But I would say figure out your cost and then factor that in and be like, okay, well, if I know my average cost is $9 and my average order is $50, well, if I could make free shipping over $90 or $80, it's like I'm getting $30, $40 more revenue at a cost of $9 or $10. And I think it just typically comes down to that, like figuring out where you're at, but where you want to get to. And then free shipping is just a lever to get there. Abandoned cart discounts are another way. There's multiple different paths and it depends on the store.
Yeah, certainly the number, I would imagine, takes into account the fact that there's physical goods versus digital goods too, and there's no need for free shipping to be offered on, you know, digital goods.
Well, it was just, I think in this report specifically, we just looked at stores that actually had shipping in general, like shipping orders.
And that fits quite nicely into the page about delivery distances and where you talk about how far away people are ordering. And it looks like the majority of stores are doing sort of proper shipping, and they're not just like delivering pizza places delivering within a few miles. There's a lot of people delivering, even thousands of kilometers, aren't there?
Yeah, I think like I'm just looking at that report as well. And sure, like under 1,000 kilometers looks like it's around 50% of orders. But yeah, that's a significant number of orders that are going a further distance, which is great. I mean, that's what like, you know, e-commerce is about. It's about enabling people to buy the items that they normally couldn't get locally. And like being in a pretty remote place like Australia, you really appreciate it because there's so much stuff I love that I have to get from overseas. So if, in my case, like every order is traveling 10,000 Ks or more. So that probably brings it up a little bit.
You alone are making up that 3% of orders that travel more than 10,000 kilometers.
In some industries, maybe. I did buy a lot of stuff, like from the UK recently.
Yeah, I never knew that about Australia.
Yeah, well, Australia, I mean, like, of course, we have so many amazing Australian brands and products and companies to buy from. But if you're into like a niche thing, I really love like synthesizers. A lot of that's not coming from Australia, or records as well. Like they're coming from America, Japan, places like that. So,
yeah, I have a similar issue in Spain. Nearly everything is not available from Spain, and I need to order it from elsewhere. So then there is that, depending on where you live.
Exactly. But I think it goes back to that. Like if you're ordering from somewhere domestically in Spain, it's just you don't need to really maximize that order as much as if you're ordering from the States and had to incur shipping. Like you probably want to add a couple more items because you're not going to make that order from the US every week, but you might do that domestically.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Bryce. That's been really interesting. And I think it's given us some good perspectives on WooCommerce that we never had access to before. So that's really helpful.
Thank you so much.
So before we finish, can you tell us where we can find you online and also where we can read the report in full?
Yeah, of course. So for me, I'm on Twitter at Bryce Adams, BryceAdams. I don't tweet much, but I'm trying to be better and taking a lot of inspiration from you, Katie. Try to engage more. And the report, it's on metric, metoriik.com/WooCommerce/insights. And yeah, like I hope people love it and really let us know your feedback because if there's metrics that people want or that would find useful for their business, we want to include those next year. A lot of this was just done on what we thought people would want, but we really do want to like build it for not just our customers, but the WooCommerce community. So it'd be great to hear more about like what what numbers would be of value to them.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Bye.
Hey, Bob WP here, and I would like to thank Airwallex and OmniSend once again for their support. Please consider checking them out. And thank you for tuning in to WooBiz Chat. If you're not subscribed, just visit dothewoo.io/subscribe or find us on your favorite pod player. And remember, you can subscribe to any of our shows directly or hear them all on our full channel feed for Do The Woo. And lastly, we welcome your thoughts, insights, and feedback on all of our episodes. So just head over to dothewoo.io and leave a comment. Until the next time.